Testing, tasting, toasting, roasting,
boasting. Testicles deviant too far small. And so with the operation of the motor-operated pushover, man succeeded his dreams.
This is Petey Page.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
So not to completely divert.
Let's completely divert.
That reminded me of something that is a piece of business that we have to handle whenever we have a guest in here.
Yeah.
How do you, Mike knows where we're going to go. Yeah. How do you guys feel about Jared Leto? The guy from Morbius?
Fight Club? What do you think?
The movie Fight Club?
Requiem for a Dream. He's in the band, 30 Seconds to Mars.
30 Seconds to Mars.
I love 30. You know who's got Happy Walters? What do you think?
Seconds to Mars.
Those are great songs they had. What's the matter with him?
We have a personal grudge against him.
Why?
He tried to pick a fight with me at a concert once.
Was he high on propane or something? Or
probably, but I don't know what he was. I don't know. So I was in the crowd. It was in TLA. I was in the crowd. He was coming through the crowd. We've told this on the air.
Uh-huh.
He was walking through the crowd to get to his. I don't remember who the opening act was. The first band. We were there to see Seven Dust. Seven Dust is phenomenal.
Oh yeah, I'm a fan.
And 30 Seconds to Mars was the second opener.
Okay.
So he was coming through the crowd. And now I don't physically remember this, but my friend, my old roommate, told me that this is what happened. He elbowed me in the back to like get through.
Okay.
And I said, yo, bro, you could say excuse me. And he was like, what did you say to me? And I said, you could say excuse me. You just elbowed me in the fucking back. Say sorry.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, and it was like getting tough and big.
Now this would have been before 30 Seconds to Mars blew up. Yeah.
Because once you hit someone, then you're infallible and you can't really
right.
get back.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is he's walking himself through the crowd. Yeah.
Well, no, there was security walking it too.
Mm.
But it was like, apparently we started like jawing at each other, and they separated us and they walked him up. So me being me, later on in the show, they go up on stage. Now we're about as where Mike is where he is, and I'm here.
And if you can't see this on the radio,
super visual.
I'm calling podcasts the radio. Isn't that cool? We're on the radio, folks. He's not 4 feet away.
So he yells that he's playing, and they just weren't that good. They weren't. I don't know if it was the wrong vibe for a song.
Yeah, whatever.
For Seven Dust, because Seven Dust had a different energy than they did.
Yeah.
And I was like, you fucking sock, boo. And I used to just say tons of shit. I just kept yelling. And at mid-song, third song, he stops. He goes, you know, for all you haters out there, we're just trying to do something different and change it up. And I said, fuck you. Do the same thing. Get off the fucking stage. And he just was getting booed. And then people just were more and more booing. Was I helping instigate it? Yeah, I was helping.
Of course you were. Yeah.
But then he looks down and he goes, you know what? Fuck this. And then he looks directly at me and he goes, I said, fuck you, get off the stage. And he goes, yeah. And he points at me. And I was like, come on, motherfucker, bring it on. My so-called life, step down and let's see what happens. I'm ready to go. My friend's like, dude, we didn't even see Seven Dust yet. Like, don't get us thrown out of this concert yet. So security comes over and he's like ready, looking like he's going to come down. But he's not really going to come down off the stage. He's not dumb.
Not with a name like Jared Leto.
Yeah. And then and I was skinnier. So I looked like more of an imposing threat. I didn't look so much like Pac-Man as I did like... As I did, like, you know, Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah.
So they broke it all up, and then later on, and then nothing ever happened, but I never got that apology. And ever since then, I have put the Hooju on his movies, and he hasn't had a really successful movie unless he's getting killed or the shit kicked out of him.
What movies is he in again?
He was in My So-Called Life, the show. He was in Requiem for a Dream, which was before this happened, so that's why it was successful.
Right.
He was in Fight Club.
Who was he in Fight Club?
He was the kid that gets the shit kicked out of him.
Oh, the blonde hair?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
him. Where did you go? Like, that Jared Leto.
Gets his
yes,
smashed.
Yeah.
He was in Lord of War. He was the...
See, what I like about this, though, is that Jimmy has, like, an actual situation with him. I have a friend who I do a show with, and he just decided one day he needed to have a band that he was enemies with.
Oh.
Just, and he randomly picked a band. So he chose Hanson.
Oh, Hanson.
Because he had never... He had never heard...
Defenseless. They're like
signed the Columbia Records.
They got dropped, but then they went somewhere else.
They were signed to Polygram,
yeah,
dude. Because I was there with Michael Green for a year. But their main gig was on Polygram.
Yeah, they went Polygram became big. It's just like when the Wallflowers were on whoever, then they went to Interscope.
The Jimmy Iovine.
But it's funny though, because he unlike Jimmy, he's never met Hanson. He's not at all familiar with their music. Like he just randomly chose them and is just like he's sticking with it.
It's as good as any of the main reasons I've heard for people to do dumb shit nowadays. So.
But here's what
let's look at the politics. Okay, people do dumb shit for like absolutely no reason. Here's your mic. It's over there.
I know, but can I recommend a course of action?
Sure.
Next time, Jared,
my clothes.
To Atlantic City or whatever does it, one of those gigs, you should get the premium meet and greet ticket, right?
I've thought about this.
It's like with $300, ooh, right? Yeah. You get to go hang out with them, right?
We're starting a group called Friends Against Leto. And
anonymous letters always welcome.
Yeah. We have everyone we've interviewed so far, we've asked to join or their opinion. Most of them tend to go towards bringing on a side. Some people won't pick a side, but they'll support my disdain for him because he hasn't put out any good movies since
I support your disdain. I don't really value but anybody that would be a dick deserves disdain.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be relatively not optimistic. What's the word? Realistic.
I know what you're talking about.
You know the word.
Yeah, like
that word. Open minded. No, what's the word?
Even keeled. It's a different word, but it's that. That's where you're getting at.
Hearing this from the person who wrote the academic curriculum accepted at all major universities on how to be a dick, right?
It's true.
Kind of like the pot calling that old black.
We're trying to get him on the show. I would love to get him on the show and for him to apologize and say, because that's all it would take.
Where does he live?
I have no idea.
It would be funny if he does come on. And he's held this grudge all these years.
Wouldn't it be?
I remember that Seven Dust show.
Bitch, I remember you. All of a sudden.
Okay. I got, talk about a grudge.
Go ahead, grudge.
I got a LinkedIn thing. Mm-hmm. So Matthew Knowles, who is Beyonce's father,
right,
has a LinkedIn thing. And I reached out to him one time just to introduce myself. And his response was, Chris, this is Matthew fucking Knowles. You don't remember, do you? I said, no. He goes, you pass on Destiny's Child when they were called so-and-so. And he goes, I even have the pass letter. And it's like, dude, did you ever see us write a pass letter?
No.
Right? It's like, pass letters are like pussies. You know, we don't want to sign.
We did the man thing. We just didn't get back to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we didn't
bullshit. Why swatch the hopes and dreams?
We just wouldn't get back to you like any major record label.
But the thing is, he said he has a pass letter, and I said to him, I said, well, why don't we put it up as an NFT and sell it? You know, like, but he didn't have pass letter. I never met the group. We never did it. You know, it's like, well, I did pass on Alicia Keys. We did pass on House of Pain.
That's what I'm going to ask.
We did pass on Arrested Development, but we have now, though. You know, but the thing is, like, we never fucking passed on. And he went on this big
diet. We passed the new House of Pain Jump Around. You know, at the end of that record, as you probably know, they did my brother.
Yeah.
This record is dedicated to Joe the Biter Nicolo. Grab the Bozak, punk. I love it. It's like... He disses
Joe loved it too.
Did he?
Yeah, he was.
That's great.
He said, "Yeah, he's right in the camera," and like,
he's like, because that's another long story. But they think, well, we did pass, you know, we did pass on him, but it was not on
the original demo.
You know, and they said that he said we took the song Jump Around and gave it to Crisscross, and they wrote the song Jump.
Yeah,
which is total bullshit.
But that was Amanda Shear, later on Amanda Demi. And I sat there, I was on the phone with her because I was looking at that cassette in the Studio 4 cubbyhole right where Dave sat. And I went and got it. I said, Amanda, what song is it? And she goes, it's called Jump. I said, okay, I'm looking at this demo. There's blah, 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 blah. There's no song, there's no song Jump on here.
There.
Yeah, there's no song Jump On, you know? And, but she was the fucking instigator.
Fucking dick.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I'm with you guys.
And if you're out there, dick, just shut up and sit down. whatever that means.
Ghost.
Okay, so so good. We settled that. Was that the tiger in your tank? Yeah. Tiger? Exxon? SL? I mean?
No, no. This is just from King Size.
Oh, I was going to say, that looks like the tiger. Put a tiger in your tank. No, you used to get that striped tiger tail and put it in your on your gas tank. No, remember?
That's a Kenzo. That's Miss Lauren Hill's favorite designer. He's wearing a Kenzo vest that he paid $1,400 for. Did you? Oh. Admit it right now.
No, no.
Admit it right now.
I got this off of King Size. This is like $14.99.
No, that's a Kenzo.
You're right with the 14.
I know. That's a
Kenzo. It's probably, it could be just screen printed on there.
We'll get her on the
phone. And hi, Miss Hill. I texted with her just 2 days ago. If you want to see the
heart, she put a heart on. She puts hearts on all mine. So I'm getting.
He's like, I got two hearts. That's
freaking out. Oh yeah, you're a dick because I'm better.
Oh my god!
Anyhow,
there's a baby doll head over here. Look at
yes.
that shit.
Yeah.
You guys can't see it on the and it's the eyes are all blacked out and there's a big knife in its head. Oh man, this is weird. That's a real baby head.
Yeah, like the only thing that's missing from here, like I keep expecting to see like one of those
pizzas
for smoking crack or smoking meth or crack out. I expect it.
It's right there. It's right there.
Oh my god. Wait, I bet you there's crack residue. Bring it over here.
Well,
there is.
Oh, good.
There's a little bit of crack. You can see it.
Is this
in the bottom?
Is this like laid back lines of blow or lines of crank? Is it blower crank? Is lines of
blow where we're going? You wanted to get a real 70s vibe.
But you know what it is? Especially there's responsibility of the audience. I don't think we should be talking about drugs unless somebody's got some.
You know what? I was in an interview many years ago, and they asked me, I would work with bands who were drug addicts, a lot of drugs, blah, blah, blah. And they said, Phil, what would you have to do if a band showed up and they wanted you to try the drug they were doing? And I said, ask me.
Okay. How about, we won't mention names, but there was one band, right?
Yes.
There were three guys in the band. And the one guy did a big line of what he thought was something, but was something else, right? And he OD'd. As they're putting him in the ambulance, Phil's going to the hospital with him. And the other two members of the band are standing there wondering if they can make last call at the club. I was like,
I saved this guy's life because he was ODing, but he was speedballing and he was doing lines of blow and he mistaken identity. He thought he was doing another line of blow and he was doing a line of China White, and
just like in Pulp Fiction,
and the old with the whole
yeah.
You didn't see what I'm doing. I'm imitating the move in Pulp Fiction where he got the adrenaline and it was hard. And it was just like that. Yeah.
Not just you got
what time is it? You know what? I gotta go. I have a foot doctor's appointment.
My goldfish is running.
It's
fever.
Still early. It's early. These podcasts. And you guys edit them or what do you do?
We edit it down to about an hour.
Oh, okay. So when we're talking about dumb shit for like 22 minutes, you edit it to just two sentences.
Unless it's really good shit.
Unless it's really good. Like, obviously, we need to get the
side, which is your right.
And talk about the brain scan screening that we're going to do.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that film deserves a second chance.
I totally agree.
The Cars deserves a second chance. Brain scan deserves a second chance.
Dishwalla County Blue Cars.
Tell the story. This is a great story.
Dishwalla, I worked with them, again, many years ago. I want to say, it was 94. Because it was the first thing we recorded at Studio 4 after we moved out of Center City. So we recorded the record. And they put out like a various number of singles for almost the next year. And it just nobody cared. And they put out all the wrong songs. So it was the end of the next year. It was 95. And Ronnie Vance, who's a great song
and our publishing guy for Geffen,
and he went up to Al Cafaro and David Anderson,
right? The heads of A&M.
At a Christmas party, and he said to Al, what the hell, man? That Dishwalla record, you dropped the ball, man. That Counting Blue Car song is a freaking hit. And they were like, yeah, but he said, you released Maze and blah blah blah, and dropped it. You never, that was the song.
At this point, the band got jobs as busboys.
The record was done.
Right.
It was, you know, as it was over.
They went from Dishwalla to Dishwasher.
To Dishwasher, yes. Right. So they
listened to it. Damn, my joke's so clever.
So David Anderley had A&R listen to it, and he went, oh shit, yeah, you know what, maybe you're, so they and again, you get the call, it was January, and Mark Mazzetti, who was A&R-ing it, said, Phil, we're gonna re-release the Dishwalla record with Counting Blue Cars as a single. I said, yeah, and Santa Claus is going to bring me the Easter Bunny. It's like, yeah, record companies don't freaking do that. You get
Tuggy for Shania Twain.
Maybe. But sure enough, they did. They reissued it. And it okay. But they worked it slow, and it just built and built and built. And it spent 180 weeks on the chart. Because it just, no, wait, more than that. It spent like over 2 years.
It was huge.
300 something weeks on the chart, more than whatever the fuck it was. 180 weeks.
Yeah, and it's a Record Club big seller too.
So but to it is too, and it is still in the hot recurring tracks. And it's just one of those songs that just constantly gets played. And I know it does because the royalties I get from that are more than almost anything I've ever done. Because it just keeps
it's a labor going. Song. It's yeah. a labor song. I have it's a group of songs because I work in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And they're all songs that they play in the grocery store. And a lot of them are songs that you didn't know you knew who sang them.
Right.
And you didn't know you knew the words, but because you hear them while you're working at the grocery store, you can recite the words, and it's one of the ones.
Yeah.
You catch yourself singing it all the time.
Yeah, and one of the biggest problems was the song, and it's hard to say, what's the lyric from that? You know, tell me all your thoughts on God, because I really like it. You know, it's like, nobody knows.
It's a great fucking sing-along.
But the song was called Counting Blue Cars, which is an obscure line in the verse.
Right.
So when people would go to find the record, they'd go, I'm looking for that tell me all your thoughts on God song, you know, God's a chick. And they're like, what? I don't know what that means. And God's it's a literally. Chick is a
good name for it. But then we go down a lot of situations like
but
that.
But they lost hundreds and thousands of sales because people. This was before, like, you'd go to the internet and buy it on Zoom or whatever. You see how I mixed up those things? Zoom is, you don't buy things on
Zoom.
Yeah,
but it's the internet. It wasn't that funny. It's the internet.
But at any rate, but they finally put a sticker on the record that said, you know, tell me all your thoughts on God, blah, 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 you know, Dishwalla. But it's a really great song. That was the very first thing we recorded at Studio 4 recording when we moved from Center City to Conshohocken.
When we did the first Cypress Hill record, that record sat for 6 months dead in the water, right? And now, they're 30 years later, they're the biggest selling Latino hip-hop group in the world. They're the biggest legacy touring act, hip-hop touring act in the world. The B-side of the third single got in the Juice soundtrack, and we sat at 32,000 records for 6 months to selling 50,000 records a week. And it's just crazy, because that's like, it just, these little things. If Chuck D was not in the room with the music supervisors when they were doing the Juice soundtrack, who knows? It would never happen. Yeah. They wanted us to drop the Fugees after the first record, right?
Yeah.
The record was out for 2.5 years. In black music, your first week in SoundScan is your biggest week, right? This record never had a big week, but 2.5 years later,
it sold about 100,000 copies, which back then was like,
but 2.5 years later, it was still selling 600 to 800 copies a week SoundScan, which was unheard of. That means that they're fine, 600 to 800 people a week. Now, of course, the Slam Remy remixes helped and all that stuff, but it just goes to show they did a show in England. And the sound was all fucked up. And the Sony heads were there. And they got on the car on the way back to the hotel. They're saying, that's it. We're dropping this group. And Luke Verger called me up the next day and said, they want to drop the Fugees, right? I remember saying a fax to Donnie Iyer. Said, Donnie, we just have to be just a little bit more patient. They're going to win Grammys. Donnie, he sent a fax back saying, I'm the one who's being patient, everything like that. But it was like they hung by a thread.
Yeah.
By a thread.
And their next record was this thing called The Score.
I think I heard of that.
But the biggest selling hip-hop out by a group in the world. And the biggest selling solo artist hip-hop in the world is
Emily.
Miss Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
Miss Lauryn Hill.
Miss Education, right?
Yeah. But none of the 25th anniversary. She's getting ready to do a tour. We've remastered the record. Like, I guess she shouldn't talk about it because she doesn't want.
But we're doing these great coffee tables. Can I plug the coffee tables?
You can plug
whatever you want, man.
Oh, and Chris is a woodworker.
Right, we're doing these.
Believe it or not, he's really good. I know you don't believe it because he sounds like kind of the numbskull, but he does really good woodwork. I don't mean the numbskull part. I just mean you're kind of.
you mean, you know? And you don't,
do you think that's fucking you that I'm always putting you down or no?
No, not at all.
It's like a weird relationship.
Yeah, I know.
Even though we're both married.
Beautiful coffee tables, right? That will be available, right? For I think we're gonna, it's like $8,500, right? But it's like
nice.
A lot of work goes into them, you know, and their 25th anniversary. And
but yeah, it's the 25th anniversary. She's playing the Roots Picnic in Philly, first weekend in June. She's one of the, she's one of the headliners.
Yes.
I've spoken to her. I've worked with her quite a bit over the last 10 years. We've done all kinds of stuff. And, but she's working on new material. She's got some great ideas. Again, I don't want to say anything because
it's top secret.
Well, she just gets upset, and I get it. If anybody talks about the stuff, without her there,
but there's gonna be a record that is going to be. All I can say is that there were songs that happened around another particular record that never came out. They're gonna come out, right? And
yeah.
It's going to be
very interesting, and we can't talk about it.
And we can't talk about it. We won't.
But it's going to be really, cool.
Really, really great. But we won't talk about
plus
it.
Plus some
you
cool.
You can't make us talk about it. No.
Plus some cool new high definition vinyl.
Jump off the stage on these.
Some new high definition vinyl reissues,
right?
And we remastered it, and it sounds spectacular.
You know, we should talk about these records for a minute in the studio. The fact that the Studio 4 vinyl, the quality, their audiophile grade records, and the thing is, no other pressing plant is doing the part that, you know, with the pre-mastering and the artificial intelligence and everything.
We do everything. I have a lacquer cutting system there, so we're cutting the lacquers. It's the first new lacquer cutting system since 1978, because as you guys know, by 1984, records were kind of on the downswing. By 87, they were gone. So records from the production side, the last real lathes that were built by Scully and Neumann and Westrix were in the late 70s. So the technology stopped being developed because records stopped being made.
Right.
So no advancements were made in that world, and no new equipment came out. Well, about 7-8 years ago, this guy, J.I. Agnew, who's brilliant technician, record cutting engineer, started to develop a new cutting system, new cutting lathe. And it's all beautiful. It's all hand-built. And I started this process almost over 2 years ago. But I now have got it in October, this J.I. Agnew hand-built, gorgeous lathe with improvements since the last lathe that was built in 1978. And it sounds amazing. And we're doing what we're calling high-definition vinyl, which has been done before. Like Mobile Fidelity, a bunch of people are doing it in a current way where you do a one-step master. And what people don't understand in terms of making records is that when you get a record, okay, you cut the machine I'm talking about cuts record one. You've kind of seen them in some videos if you've seen Jack White or whatever, but it's that big machine with the big head and it cuts record one. You take that first record, you spray it in silver, then you plate it in nickel, then you peel that plate off, and now you have a stamper that makes records. That's how you make a record. You take a stamper, you put a big chunk of vinyl in it, you heat it up with 180 Celsius with 15 tons of pressure, and you make a record. That's how you make records. But that stamper is actually a third generation because, and I know it's kind of long and boring, but what happens is you have to make multiple molds to make multiple stampers. So the record you get is actually third generation down. Well, when you only make one stamper from that original lacquer cut, it only does 1,000 records, but it's a first generation stamper. So that's why you call it a one step. What that does is it gives you 3 steps closer to the original recording. So it sounds amazing.
But the other part too is that before the lacquer gets cut, there's a software package that listens, it auditions the studio master, and it gives you a virtual rendering of the acetate and it shows you everywhere where there's deformities in the vinyl, right? It's like, because a vinyl record's a vinyl record, right? Vinyl record, you can't do anything to it. You can't make it into a CD. It is what it is. But you can manipulate the manufacturing characteristics of the grooves, right? And you end up, your vinyl sounds like the intended audio equalization of the original studio master. Plus, with the one step, you can't make a record that sounds any better than this.
Yeah, and it's by Perfect Groove. They're from Austria. It's called it's again. It's a software that analyzes the audio, and it literally shows you the dynamic. It shows you the grooves and plays you the sound of what the acetate would sound like, and then analyzes it and indicates everywhere where there's an issue. And it's amazing. It really is. But with that, we're, as a matter of fact, there's, I can't say because it wouldn't let me, Well, there's a couple of new records coming out, but they haven't released the information yet, but they're incorporating this new stuff, this new technology. And it really does sound good, but we're calling it, high definition, no, Studio 4 Signature Series, whatever it is.
We're
partnering with artists right now to continue. And we're not, it's not like we invented this. Again, Fidelity, a bunch of people are doing it. But it's cool.
The Vinyl Plus. Vinyl Plus is another thing, another innovation that is like, want the most amount of vinyl on a record because more vinyl, it's more durable. And so like longer lasting life, degradation, right? Yeah. Degradation. It reduces over long time plays and everything.
Yeah. And for vinyl geeks, it's like a 180 gram instead of a 140 gram.
Right.
But we do this thing and some records, and most records are 130 grams. They're not even 140, but we do a thing called 140 plus, where it's actually 147 to 150 grams. So it's not a 180, but we're not charging you an extra $12 because it's a 180.
Right.
It's in that same price point as a 130.
So you're not doing flexies.
No, we're not. Or picture discs.
And it's not, the records don't come in some shitty inner sleeve.
But we are doing
things. Yes. You know, like
we just got actually word from Universal to come up with because everybody wants the craziest shit. Now they're putting weed and piss and blood and all kinds of shit in records, which they are. But I just got a list of the things you can and you can't put into vinyl. Because when you press a record, again, it's 15 bar. But that's 15 tons of pressure. There are certain materials that it varies the molecular structure and it can fuck you up.
How does poop hold up?
It's fine. I've seen it. I've seen poop. I've seen piss. I've seen blood. I've seen pot.
Didn't Kiss mixed to blood, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Kiss has a, it's kooky, but the whole process. But we're actually my pal Casey Gibson from TPC Vinyl, amazing guy who designs vinyl. He built a pressing plant in Taiwan, and he makes the best audiophile grade vinyl.
He's a luminary in the world of vinyl.
He was just at our place a couple days ago. And he sent me all kinds of these new materials that we're going to be experimenting with so that we can come up with some new, like, never seen before stuff, which is fun.
And also the plant is one of the only plants really that uses 100% virgin vinyl, which is a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
You know, because no additives, no preservatives.
It's Casey's TPC stuff. And we care, man. It's like when we're making records, our guys, you know, Richard, Vincent, Dave, they listen. You know, we listen to like the first 20 records, and if something doesn't look right, oh, there's some stitching, there's some hooking. We listen to it, and not that, you know, yes, there are some fine record companies, manufacturers who do that, but we take it to a real extreme because everybody on our team are real musicians. Richard's an amazing drummer. Dave's an amazing sax player. They play in bands. I mean, and you know, I'm a producer. So it's a passion for us. So so if you need a record done, give us a call. Go to studio4vinyl.com. That's 1-800-228-2500. Call before midnight tonight. You don't get. No, that's not the number. But studio, the number 4, vinyl.com. And at very competitive prices.
we ever do a Brutal Dudes record, we'll come see you guys.
You will, absolutely. I know the owner.
You should do a best of, you know, best of Brutal Dudes. It's like, and I think half the record would be us.
Yes, right, obviously. Yeah,
and then whatever other shit.
But best of records. As you guys
that'll know, be on the back of the sleeve. It'll have you guys, then side B, some other shit. It's just that's good.
Resurgence of people buying this nice little Victrolas. And yeah. What's the other one? The
Crosley's a popular one. Yeah.
The David Crosby, but it's Crosby. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Poor David Crosby, he just passed away. But you know what? It's cool. But when people go into record stores, since they're kind of like, what do I want? The greatest hits and the best of. Records are doing really well because they, you know what, I can't afford to buy those 12 records, but it'd be great to have, you know, Van Morrison's greatest hits or whatever.
1978 was the record year in the history of vinyl, 334 million records worldwide. In 2000, less than a million, right? Combined with CDs. In 2022, the IRAA, which is like the government regulation, and Magazine made a joint statement saying that if the industry, because they don't anymore because they tore down all their pressing plants, had the capacity to meet consumer demand, we would be over 400 million albums.
It would be the biggest. That's selling,
how big vinyl it would be the is big, right
biggest
now.
Selling year in history.
And vinyl just surpassed CDs at their height of popularity. Yeah. I mean, that's like the business is
going on my dad's old
just the physical side, because there was only a physical side back in, you know, the 90s when Rough House was in
Payday.
It's a bigger business now than it was then.
Yeah. I mean, I will definitely be coming to you guys for my next vinyl.
Okay. and I'm telling you, we'll treat you good. Ashley, who's our production manager, front of house, all that. She's awesome. She's great. She's my daughter-in-law. She's married to my son, Drew, but she got the gig because she's great. And everybody loves her. She's awesome.
Did you guys notice that the titles on Pornhub are getting really out there?
Yeah.
The stepmom thing is just so overplayed. You know what I mean?
Well, they're overplayed.
I know. And look
at my friend's sister. My older brother's sister's girlfriend.
My best friend's mom. This is it.